This sermon was downloaded from www.spiritnerds.org. We equip Christians with thousands of strategic spiritual materials daily. Join millions of Christians around the world who have come to Spirit Nerds to learn about God and His Word today.
Our first speaker for today is Mr. Dr. Olatunbosun Tijani. Dr. Olatunbosun Tijani currently serves as Nigeria's Minister of Communications, Innovation, and Digital Economy, appointed by President Bola Ahmed Tinubu in August this year. He's best known for co-founding Co-Creation Hub, popularly known as CC Hub, a pioneering technology innovation center in 2010. In its early years, Dr. Tijani spearheaded groundbreaking social technology projects, including the Lagos Innovation Hotspots and the IHQ initiative, which transformed Yaba into Africa's fastest growing tech hub through collaborations with MainOne Cable and the Lagos State Government. Under his guidance, CC Hub has been a catalyst for social innovation, influencing diverse sectors such as the environment with WeCyclers, fiscal transparency budget, e-commerce with TraceList, healthcare, LifeBank, education, ReLearn, wellness, Trooper, transportation, Go My Way, civic engagement, Go Vote, online security, Safe Online, and many more. In 2019, Dr. Tijani oversaw CC Hub's acquisition of Kenya's iHub and the establishment of CC Hub Design Lab in Kigali, Rwanda. Dr. Tijani holds a bachelor's degree in economics from the University of Jos, Nigeria, a master's degree in information systems and management from the Warwick Business School, UK, and a PhD in innovation and economic development from the University of Leicester. He contributes to academia as a visiting professor at the Wits School of Governance and has participated in prestigious programs at Harvard Kennedy School and Stanford University Center for Democracy, Development, and the Rule of Law. It's our honor today to welcome to the platform Nigeria, Dr. Tijani, Dr. Olatunbosun Tijani.
I think Pastor Kpoju and the team is built and still building. I consider platform a very unique platform for social consciousness, but also a platform for serendipity as well, which I think is very rare to find in Nigeria. So on this note, I'm going to request that we all stand up and join me in giving a very deserving round of applause to Pastor Kpoju. Pastor, you can sit. Thank you. I think for those of you that have been following this platform for years, you understand that it has nothing to do with religion. People from, you know, everywhere in the world, from all sort of religion, pay attention to what's been happening on the platform. Personally, I'm extremely honored to be here as the Minister of Communications, Innovation, and Digital Economy. I think I'm just 5 weeks into this role. So today I'm going to ask that you don't see me as a government official, but you see me as a fellow believer in the incredible potential of our great continent, not just Nigeria, but also the unprecedented things that we can achieve when we unite. I want you to remember that. At a time when our world is rapidly evolving and digital technologies are redefining industries and economies, our generation, and I consider everyone in the room today to be part of that generation, we are at a pivotal moment in history. And the biggest challenge we face is not even the question as to whether we're going to embrace the changes that is happening, but how are we going to do so to uplift our people? How do we leverage it for our collective good? I think this is the biggest question we need to ask ourselves. There's been so many industrial revolutions, but what we tend to find is a few people benefit from it. But this one is quite unique. It's unique in the sense that it offers the opportunity for inclusivity. But as people, we have to be conscious as to whether we're going to use it in that way. And this is the guiding principle behind my approach as a minister, a principle that I believe transcends political affiliations, your religious beliefs, but also regional differences as well. It is a principle that recognizes our shared future and our shared prosperity, and that this shared prosperity and future hinges on our collective effort and shared values as well. It's not something that government can do alone. We all have to do it together. As I go into my presentation, I ask that you please come with me on a journey. I don't want you to be distracted because there's going to be a bit of technicalities to the things I'm going to talk about. So for those who probably have economics background, it should be fairly easy, basic economics. But for most people in the room that may not have that background and those watching, I'll try as much as possible to simplify it, but I want you to pay attention. I ask that you open your heart and find a role for yourself in this transformative journey and future that I'm about to describe. Whether you're an educator, a government official, a business leader, a young entrepreneur, a community organizer, or even a parent who is nurturing those that will come after us, the next generation, your contributions are extremely important. It is your ideas and faith in Africa that will lift and secure our future. So let's take advantage of the opportunity today to kickstart the beginning of a journey towards Nigeria and Africa, where economic prosperity is not just a dream. You know, it's something we've always dreamt of. That is not just a dream, but is a reality. Let's embrace this vision with open hearts and unwavering determination. Now that that is out of the way, I'm going to go into my presentation. Are we ready? Fantastic. When I took over my job, I don't know if you can see the title, Accelerating Our Collective Prosperity Through Technical Efficiency. Even from the title, it's already a bit complicated, but those with economic backgrounds can understand technical efficiency. But when I took over my job, if we can go to the next slide, one thing I did is to go into what typically is a big problem for any leader of any nation in the world, which is to look at the GDP numbers. People have different opinions on GDP. And for those who may not understand what GDP is, think of GDP as those building blocks, right? If you have a society, the way you live your life daily depends on whether there's electricity, whether the roads are okay, whether there's security, whether you can find the food that you need affordably, whether you can find a job. All those things are things that people have to produce. And collectively, they make what makes it possible for you to live in a society, which is why it's called gross domestic product. Right? And the aggregation of that is what people tend to measure to determine whether a nation is doing well. Some people will question whether this is the right way to measure. But when you look at Nigeria, over the years, it's actually been growing. You can say the size of it has been growing. But if we go to the next slide, the reality is that does GDP truly reflect a better quality of life? There's a T missing in that for every Nigerian. That's the question you ask yourself. And the reason why that question is valid is if five of you in the crowd, if you come together today and you do a business that makes $5 billion and you domicile that business in Nigeria, it's going to affect the GDP of Nigeria. But the reality is that doesn't imply that it's actually going to touch the everyday people. So I decided when I took over my job to better understand the nuances behind how GDP is calculated. Next slide. So I went into it and I found that there are actually three key sectors that are responsible for the way GDP is calculated in Nigeria. By now, I can do this slide without even looking, by the way, because I've looked at this so many times. And you find that there are three of them. One is industry, agriculture, and services. So this is done by CBN. If you can understand what you're seeing on that graph, you can see that industry has been declining over the years, even though it seems like our numbers have been growing. Agriculture, on the other hand, which is the biggest contributor to our GDP in Nigeria, has been somewhat flat and stagnant over the year. The one that has been growing significantly is what is called services, and I belong to that industry. So this is exciting, but it doesn't tell the real story. Remember, I've described what GDP is. This is the true picture of our economy. If you want a better Nigeria, you have to try to understand this. Next slide. So I decided to go into, you know, if they say agriculture, what are the activities in agriculture that actually contribute to these numbers that we see in agriculture? Then I found that Nigeria, we claim to have competitiveness at least in four key activities in agriculture, which is crop production, livestock, forestry, and fishing as well. But unfortunately, over the years, the key contributor to our GDP has been crop production. As you can see, livestock, forestry, and fishing has been flat. And for those of you guys who live in Lagos, you can see the body of water that we have, not just in Lagos, but the entire nation. How come fishing, for instance, is not contributing tremendously to the GDP of the country? This is a big question we should be asking ourselves. How come we still import a lot of fish? Forestry, for those from the east, you know, I was in Owerri last week, and I saw how green, you know, the place is from the airplane. You know, there's so much we can do there. How come forestry has not been contributing tremendously to our gross domestic product in Nigeria? Because it means that we can produce a lot of things, whether it's timber and everything that comes with forestry. And we can even export, but also consume locally as well. Livestock is another one. You know, we still import chicken in Nigeria. So how come we can't feed ourselves properly? Next slide. Then I moved into industry. It's even more exciting here. You can see that the biggest contributor, which there's no surprise there, is crude petroleum, right? We have something in moderate, which is food, beverages, and tobacco. For those who follow our economy, you know, British America Tobacco, I think they have a factory here. I don't know if it's still there. That serves the entire region. So it's something we produce really well. Food and beverages, of course, the number is high, so we have to eat. So it's okay if we produce all of these things. That's why we do it. But look at the list of things that we've had on a very flat level for many years. Just look at the list. Mining, which we have a lot of opportunity in. The current president and government is trying to monetize that significantly. There's a lot of illegal activities going on there. Look at oil refining. We don't refine enough in the country. So you can see textile and apparel. You know, I was talking with Prof backstage. Nigeria is one of the few countries in Africa where our local designs are now considered to be formal. We can wear it anywhere in the world. But unfortunately, the fabric that is used, we're still importing the most of it. Things around water supply, construction, these things are still pretty flat. So to what I was saying about the building blocks, imagine if all those things are actually being properly exploited. Think of what will happen to our economy. Next slide. And to the third one, which is services, which is where I belong, you can see that the only thing that is contributing to that one is actually information and communications technology. If you work in the tech space, you should give yourself a boost. Like, we contributed over 18% last quarter to the Nigerian GDP. Over 18%. That's how significant that sector is. But on the other hand, look at so many other things classified under services that are still flat. Accommodation, you know, so you're not surprised when you say the quality of what is available in terms of stock of real estate is not great because we're not doing as much as we should be doing. Even education, the level of contribution of education to our GDP is still low. Next slide. Why am I saying all of this? As we demand and request that there should be a better society, we need to always find a way to be part of understanding what and where better societies are created from. So I thought I would use simple economics to explain this. So if you want any society to grow, there's probably two options. The innovators amongst ourselves can probably come up with more options. But two popular options. One is that you increase the factors of production, so labor, land, and maybe capital. You can increase them, get more people to work, increase the money you pump in. But the reality is that the level of output you get from adding more of these things to your production factor is always going to be limited, right? If you get two countries together to use the same thing, there's a differentiator. But the differentiator, on the other hand, is the second option, that while you use the same labor, the same capital, land, if you introduce a third factor, which is called technological innovation or technological advancement, it will help the results that you get from how you are applying your factor of productions. It's going to give you more. And we've seen this in history. It's not something new. Imagine if you get people to cultivate the land without using tractors. You know, you get 100 people to cultivate land without tractors, get another 100 to cultivate land with tractors. I don't have to explain it too long for you to know that what it would take the first team 100 days to do, it would probably take the other team 10 hours to do, right? So this is something that has been proposed and pushed over the years through what is called the Cobb-Douglas production function. And what this is highlighting is the importance of not just technology, but a new way of doing things, which is innovation. It means we can't do what we've always been doing and expect results that is different from the results that we've always been getting. We can get more investors to come into our countries. We can get more of our people, trying to work. But the reality is that if we're not introducing what is called technical efficiency, which is a new way of doing things, the results we're going to get is not going to be any significant. And one of the new ways of doing things is actually using technology. It's not new. It's always been there. You know, the steam engine helped humanity significantly to change outcomes. When we were able to mass produce things, manufacturing at that scale helped humanity to be able to produce more. When we got to the point where we could computerize things as well, it helped humanity to produce more. And I'll give you a last example on here with the next slide. In the U.S., for instance, the amount of labor that has been going into agriculture has actually been somewhat declining. So for those who can probably see from far, there's a line there that is almost yellowish. The number of people who work in agriculture has been declining. The amount of land that they put into agriculture as well, it's also been somewhat flat or declining as well. That slide is looking different there. There we go. But the reality is that in the U.S., the output of the agriculture sector has been on the rise while the input is declining. So if you're looking at it from the normal basic economics or the way of doing things, you get confused as to what exactly has been happening. But the way they calculate that third thing that I introduced, which is the new way of doing things, particularly through technology, is through something that is called total factor productivity. Simply meaning, what are the other things that contribute to raising your output that is outside of labor and land and maybe capital? Right? What are those other things? So anything that those things bring to the table, they classify that under total factor productivity. So when they calculated the total factor productivity for agriculture in the U.S., that's also on the rise as well. You can see it's almost matching the output as well. Which means to the great, and I know we may be thinking we're 220 million people, why do we want to use more smart ways to produce? It's a lie. Look at all the things that we're not doing. We're not doing fishing well. We're not doing forestry well. So there's enough places for us to actually put our people to work. Technology is not going to take that away if we maximize the opportunity. And this is the story of many countries in Africa. Next slide. And this is what is driving the way I see my work at the ministry. Coincidentally, this wasn't planned, but I also attend this church, so I have some caveats put out there. I released my strategic blueprints just about 3 hours ago. It wasn't planned that I was going to talk about it here first, so for the record. But it happened that I'm doing it anyways. But I also think the platform is deserving of it because so many people are watching. So it's a good place to also talk about it. So I'm taking my responsibility slightly differently. Over the years, people talk about the ministry as if it's a separate economy. Technology is different. It has nothing to do with the rest of the economy. But for me, I'm trying to get us to reimagine the Federal Ministry of Communications, Innovation, and Digital Economy as the public sector ecosystem that actually will drive the application of technical efficiency to raise the level of productivity across our key sectors. I hope that's not too much English. Meaning that the ministry can work with the Ministry of Agriculture. The ministry, based on its mandates, can actually lead the application of technology in government, that the ministry can create an enabling environment for more people to build technology solutions. And if you follow me on social media, anywhere online, you'll be able to gain access to this strategic blueprint. And I've proposed five different pillars. The first one, which is the foundation, is knowledge. Then you have the second one, which is policy. Third is infrastructure. The fourth one is innovation, entrepreneurship, and capital. And the last is trade. So if we go to the next slide, I have 11 minutes left. The first one, which is knowledge, is actually very clear and straightforward to saying you can't do things differently or apply knowledge or technology if you don't have the know-how. That's the reality, right? You can't get a farmer from a village who's never used a tractor before to use tractor efficiently to farm. You can't. You need the knowledge to be able to do that. So if Nigeria as a nation is going to leapfrog our economic development and drive prosperity, we must build the core knowledge that is required to actually drive what we want to see in our society. So that's what our first pillar is all about. I'm not going to retreat. I told you guys I can speak to this thing if you wake me up at any time. But the three core parts of this that we're trying to do is over the next 4 years, we want Nigeria not only to have a strong pool of technical talent locally, but to become a net exporter of technology talent as well. And don't let anyone tell you that it can't be done. We've done it in the private sector. 10 years, 14 years ago, Nigeria was not a key player. Today, our technical people are all over the place, especially in the startup world. India has done it before. The reality is also that technology is embedded in everything that we do today. If you look around you, each one of us will probably carry or use on average 10 connected devices, from your watch to your phone, to the IoT devices that you have at home, to your TV. Beyond that, we also use a lot of technical platforms as well. The world is going to need technical talent to continue to build those solutions. And historically, we get this technical talent from the West. But unfortunately for the West, their population is declining. While it's declining, it's also aging as well. You know, I always tell people, if you have a second passport and you live in another country, you will find probably 10 software engineers in Lagos before you find one in the UK in your circle, or in the US. If you live in the US and you have your social community, before you find one software engineer there, you will find 10 in Lagos or in Nairobi or in Joburg. That's the reality. So we are the future. And you know why we're the future here? We're a continent of 1.2 billion people. 40% of those are young people across Africa, I believe, under the age of 25. And this is where Nigeria is also important, because it's not just that we show off for the sake of showing off, right? In Nigeria, 60% of our 220 million people are under the age of 25, which means we have the ingredients that is actually going to power the world, because these young people are digital natives. And if we give them the right resources, they can actually become that engine that the world requires to be able to thrive. The second thing we're going to be doing under knowledge, I won't spend as much time on the other bit so that I can wrap up in 8 minutes, is also ensuring that we drive digital literacy up significantly. The target is that in Nigeria, 90% of our population by 2030 should be digitally literate, which means they don't have to become software engineer, but they have to be conversant and comfortable with technology, especially digital technology. That has significant impact on the complexity of our economy. The ability of these people to participate in meaningful jobs, but also consume meaningful products as well. It raises the complexity of the economy, so it's something we want to do. And lastly, under knowledge, is we want to actually be about 25% percentile when it comes to research in a number of emerging technologies in the world in the next 4 years. We want to move to 25%. I know people will say, how are you going to do that? You've not fixed your education. But I always tell people, don't let them deceive you. There's no top academic institution that you visit in the world that you don't find in Nigeria. None. When I started, we wrote some code to extract all the artificial intelligence publications in the world. After extracting this publication, we used a library for names. So there's one library that contained Nigerian names. And we taught the code to identify from the list of the publishers of these articles or academic papers those that are Nigerians. And we found over 5,000 Nigerians at the top of artificial intelligence. And you know one thing I know, I don't know about you, most Nigerians are always restless, no matter how well they're doing anywhere in the world. They always are looking for ways to contribute. So my mandate under this ministry is to find a way to build a bridge to give them the opportunity to collaborate with local researchers and publish with the local universities becoming the principal academic institution that is actually tied to. That's my strategy. So in 4 years, we can leapfrog easily if we want to. If we go to the next slide, I'll rush through this. You've moved beyond me. The second pillar is policies. I won't waste much time on that. We're trying to reimagine policy as a tool for enabling innovation as against a tool for regulating. Because in the technology space, because of the dangers of most of the emerging technologies, governments in Africa tend to be very strict around how policy is used to regulate. And in the process, they stifle innovation. But the reality is that a lot of the technologies that we're seeing today, you can't really stop them. You can't stop them. What you need to do is understand them. So we want to change the game and use policy to enable the smart people amongst us to innovate responsibly. In the process of innovating responsibly, we believe that we're going to learn a lot. So if you check my document, you're going to find about 10 or so policies that we're either updating or we're bringing new ones to make sure that policy can open up the space for everyone. If you go to the third one, pillar three is infrastructure. Without infrastructure, you can't become a superpower in technology, especially in the digital economy. So, for instance, if you don't have good quality access to internet, there's not much you can do as a nation. But, you know, we don't celebrate our wins enough. Nigeria is one of the few countries in Africa with 7 submarine cables sitting here in Lagos. So the first portion of the investment has been done. We have, you know what they call submarine cables? These are cables that carry the internet. Most of them are coming from Europe. And to get them to Nigeria, you have to lay them under the sea. So technically, you can imagine what that would be like, the work and the investment that has gone into that. 7 of them have landed. 2 more is landing in a couple of weeks. I think it's there, but it's been officially declared open. But the last work to get you to be able to use those things is that we now have to lay them across our country as well. And the moment we can do that, you'll find the quality of your calls will go up significantly because the telcos have to use mast at the minute, all those physical things that they build all around. It costs a lot of money, right? So that's why the quality of service is poor. I know that this is something people complain about. The telcos are actually pushing themselves, trying hard, at least some of them, to ensure that they can deliver good quality service. But it's a lot of engineering work if you use the whole technology. The other thing we're doing with infrastructure which I'm sure most of you know about, is NIPOST. Right? How many people have been to a NIPOST location in the last two, three months? Have you been? Have you used NIPOST in the last 2, 3 months? Many people haven't. But the reality is that you can't have a vibrant economy if people cannot move goods. If a farmer in Funtua cannot grow fresh vegetables and get it to Pastor Kpoju in Lagos, who is conscious of his health and he wants to eat clean, then we have a problem. That farmer is not going to be able to add to our GDP. Pastor Kpoju is not going to be able to get the service that he requires. So the GDP numbers won't be where we want it to be. So NIPOST has a critical role to play in connecting all of us. So we're trying as much as possible to reimagine what NIPOST is all about. Perhaps turn it into a franchise where a young businessman can own a NIPOST location, not own outrightly, but the government can, you know, franchise it out to you. You run that location. That location will not only serve for delivery purpose, it also become a location where you can go to sign up for your passport if you want to. You can go there to open up a bank account. You can go there to also transact all sort of businesses. It becomes like a business center, really, for you. That's also something we're reimagining. So bring a lot of technology into NIPOST. Make it a lot more competitive and open to people. We believe that is an interesting and required piece of work. On that infrastructure, we're also ensuring that a satellite company is actually competitive. We do have satellites out there. We want it to be competitive. We want it to produce productively and contribute to the economy as well. We've also been investing as a nation in innovation spaces over the years. When I got into office, I published something where I found that collectively, all the agencies under my ministry, that we've actually invested in over 2,500 innovation spaces or community spaces. These are spaces in schools, in communities where you can go, you find computers, in some cases, internet. But the reality is that some of them have not been managed efficiently. So part of our goal is to reimagine a new business model to ensure that those locations can actually serve our people. But also taking it beyond that, we want to set up more in locations where we don't have. Again, check the strategic blueprint. You see a lot of the work we're doing in infrastructure. I think it's about 7 or 8 things that we've prioritized there. Next slide. I need to rush through now. Innovation and entrepreneurship. This one is quite clear. Without, I think my slide is not rendering well. Without innovators, without entrepreneurs, our dream to use technology efficiently is not going to happen. We want to see more entrepreneurs building technology solutions for agriculture, for transportation, for any sector that you can imagine. We're going to use policy to support that. Government is also going to put money on the table so that we can actually increase the pool of patient capital that is available to these guys. The more they build, the more our critical sectors will become a lot more competitive and the more they'll be able to contribute to our GDP. Next slide, which I think is the last part of the pillar. And it's trade, right? We are the giant of Africa, as we always say. And I know that there's so many reasons why we question that. But the reality is that if Nigeria doesn't take its business seriously, we're actually doing a disservice to the continent. We're pulling it down. A more competitive Nigeria is a more competitive Africa. That's the reality. We have the market size. We have the people. We have the energy. The percentage of Nigerians that you find, if you put down 10 black people, is significant. So if you're part of a family where you're not contributing and all you do is pull it down, it's a big challenge. So we do have a role to play in lifting the African continent, increase the pool of the size of trade that is happening between African countries. We open up our own economy, allow people to trade with us so that we can also trade with the rest of the continent as well. So we specifically want to raise the amount of technology trade that Nigeria is doing with the rest of Africa, but also the rest of the world. What is also quite good about trade is that when you prioritize international markets, you're forced to think more thoroughly about the quality of the organization that you run. You know, if Pastor Kpoju is inviting all these international speakers, it has to be more conscious about the quality of the support they will get when they come to this event. That's just how it works. So the more we prioritize trade, the more we're able to deepen our economy and the quality of it. Next slide. And I'm not naive. A lot of people will say, these people that are coming from private sector, the people in public sector will pull you down. I think it's a lie. I think what we tend to do is people go with a fixed mindset when you're going into a new environment. I'm a social scientist. My PhD, I use social theoretical frameworks in the things I did. And I understand that our biggest challenge is that for everywhere you find yourself, it's a social setting and there are dynamics within that social setting that will determine whether you're able to work or not. Your role as a leader is to go in there and understand how you can manage the social relations and structure to allow you to deliver on what you want to deliver. So it's a major part of whether I'm going to be successful in government or not. So with my team, we actually came up with this. This is our IP. We came up with a model. We've built the software for it that takes into consideration all the interrelationships and the dynamics within public sector to gauge all the projects that we're going to do to deliver this dream. So if we have a project, does this project require that we go to the National Assembly to get approval for our budget? Does it require that we work with other ministries and parastatal? How much of that project will require that we work with the private sector, right? All those things, we model them, creating metrics for them, and we're able to then determine whether a project is low, medium, or high on their complexity index. And what that will tell us is that as we're trying to achieve our objectives, we know what to prioritize to ensure that we can at least hit 50% or minimum. And the ones that are audacious, that require support, we know that we may need to go higher up to get support to be able to implement them. This is something that we've created. It's new. If it works for our ministry, we'll share with the whole government and probably the rest of the continent as well. Let's move to the next slide. And almost lastly is also that we're adopting a new way of doing things for, again, those who understand economics. For you to innovate and innovate smartly, the West over the years has informed us that we have to follow something that is called the National Innovation System. It may be complex for you, but for you to be able to innovate, you need your universities producing optimally, you need capital to be available, you need all those things to come together. If we're to follow that, what I've shared with you is a dream. It's not going to happen in 12 years. But the fact that we live in a world today where knowledge is being generated, stored, and shared within a web of network. Right? I use the typical thing with this in Nigeria. Gone are those days where you have to go to Harvard or MIT to acquire special knowledge. It's gone. Technology and connection gives us the opportunity to be able to access knowledge, network, and resources way faster. You can be in Ajegunle with a phone, and you gain access to knowledge that typically you won't have access to. And that is what we're going to do. We won't wait until everything is ready in Nigeria. We're going to be very intentional about the partnerships that we build. We will leverage deeply. This one, I'm saying this now. This is the second time I'm saying it. We're going to leverage deeply our diaspora community. Deeply. Because we think a lot of them have access to resources that can help lift our nation. So that's the new way of doing things that we're going to adopt. Next slide. And the question is, what role are you going to play? What will you build? Our president, President Bola Ahmed Tinubu, is not going to come and become the fisherman that is going to change fishing in Nigeria. Of course, policies can be put in place to make that happen. But when I started CC Up 14 years ago, there was no special policy to support me to start. I just wanted to build. So we need builders. We need more builders. In fact, in the process of building, society learn what sort of policies we should be making. I'm only 5 weeks in government, but I was surprised at the amount of people who actually want the best for the nation. I was. The reality is that the way politics is done is slightly different from the way you actually develop society, and it's not unique to Africa, because we talk about Africa a lot in that context. It's not. It's not. We've seen countries like the UK, we know the problems, the challenges they've had with leadership. But it doesn't mean that as a nation, they won't continue to grow. Right? Because they prioritize building through multiple sources. So to lift Nigeria, we need more builders. And the question is, go back to the things I've presented around the GDP. All those areas where we've had flat growth, who are the people that will fill the gaps there? It's going to be you and I. So ask yourself the question, what will I build? Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Dearly beloved, we believe you've been greatly blessed by this sermon. Do you want to download more sermons of your favorite preachers? Visit www.spiritnerds.org today. Reach us by email for more information and concerns at spiritnerds.org@gmail.com. God bless you.